This is an iHeart podcast.
Oh, we have a primary challenger for one of our worst senators. We'll talk about that tonight. We got a little update on the old tariff war. Sucks to be China right now. Are Democrats going to be charged with treason? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, I have huge news that is going to apply to everybody, not just people who live in Texas. I'm sure you've heard, but last night, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton formally announced that he is charging? That's not what he's doing. He's challenging, I guess as AG, he could be charging. He's challenging useless Texas Senator John Cornyn. Here was the announcement.
I'm announcing that I'm running for U.S. Senate. Against John Cornyn, who apparently is running again for his fifth term, which would put him there three decades. It's definitely time for a change in Texas. We have another great U.S. Senator, Ted Cruz, and it's time we have another great senator that will actually stand up and fight for Republican values, fight for the values of the people of Texas. Look, he said 24 years of this, which I think is plenty given his lack of production. It's hard to think of the things that he's done good for Texas or for the country. I can certainly point to many things like his gun restrictions, his lack of wanting to fund a border wall and disagreeing with President Trump on that, and even opposing President Trump's election in 2016 and the most recent election. So there's certainly many things to focus on that he has not done, and I think it's time that somebody held him accountable for that.
Okay. First, this is majorly, majorly, majorly important for every single person watching, and I'm going to explain why. Here is how it has worked for the longest time. You see, right now, maybe you're frustrated with the lack of action from Congress. Why can't we get something good out of the House? Why can't we get something good out of the Senate? Trump's been there. It's been 3 months. Where are the good bills? Why are we not codifying this into law? Why isn't the House? Why isn't the Senate doing anything? Why don't they do anything? Okay, well, allow me to explain why they don't do anything. They don't do anything because the long-serving establishment Republicans, they are the ones that hold the bulk of the power in the House and the Senate, you see? If you've been there for a really long time, what you've done with that length of time is you have managed to buy influence. You have managed to figure out the ways to suck up to the DC swamp. And when you suck up to the DC swamp, what happens is money comes pouring into your campaign. We'll use, actually, a perfect example of this would be the defense industry in this country, the military-industrial complex. It's a perfect example of this. If you're a Republican senator, you can look and find all the waste and fraud in our defense sector, and it's staggering. And you would think tackling that kind of theft from the taxpayer would be a priority, but you know what actually fills the campaign coffers? Sucking up to the defense contractors. You pass another ridiculous $1 trillion defense bill full of waste. Lo and behold, Boeing, Raytheon, all the defense contractors will write you large checks to keep you in power. With those checks, your campaign coffers fill up. You get to run for re-election every 2 years or 6 years, depending on if you're in the House or the Senate. And what you do is you take that large quantity of money that you've hoovered up from the D.C. swamp, and you flood the airwaves. Today it would be more social media because that's where a lot of the campaign advertising is done. But you turn on the news at night and you see commercials about how conservative, how right-wing you are. I'll close the border. I'll fight for you. They're flooding YouTube, everything with that. Now, they don't do anything. In fact, they harm the country until it's time to get reelected, where they spend millions and millions and millions of dollars telling the brain-dead GOP primary voter how far to the right they are and how much they support President Trump. And that is exactly how we haven't gotten anything done, because we can't get these people out of Washington, because the GOP primary voter continues to elect the same losers over and over and over again. We elect them, they go back to Washington, they are the heads of these really important committees, and they stop any and all reform. They are there, John Cornyn and his types. They are there to protect the swamp. They wear a Republican label, but that is their central role, and they know that's their central role. They are the ultimate in controlled opposition. Are you angry about the communism that has flooded the United States of America? One of the main reasons communism has flooded this country, and more importantly, this government, is because people like John Cornyn will stick their foot in the door to keep it open enough so the communists can get in. He is there to ensure the enemy has access to destroy you, and he's been successful at it for 24 years now. That's why we don't get anything done in the House. That's why we don't get anything done in the Senate. And so the reason they keep screwing us over, we just kind of talked about it, the reason Republicans like James Lankford will try to pass an amnesty bill, which he did last year, the reason John Cornyn will pass a gun control bill, he worked with Democrats to pass a gun control bill after Uvalde, the reason he does that is John Cornyn, honestly, if you have to defend him, John Cornyn gets it. He understands the game. He understands that he can do these things, especially when it's not an election year. He can screw you, screw me, screw over the entire country over and over and over again. He'll raise enough money to lie about it when election season rolls around. That's how the game has worked. John Cornyn has simply been playing the game that works for a very long time. Screw over the voter for 5 years. In year six, take your millions. Tell the voter you're conservative. The voter re-elects you. Now, how do we change that system? Because I think you would agree, no matter where you are, we have to change that system. We have to change the way things are done in order to save the country. We can't stop communism if John Cornyn is still there holding the door open for them. If Mitch McConnell is there, if James Lankford is there, if Tom Tillis is there, if Bill Landry is there, if Mike Rounds is there, if John... you get the idea. We can't stop the communists if these losers are still there aiding and abetting them. We have to start taking them out in primaries. You're not going to take out John Cornyn in a general election, and you wouldn't want a Democrat in there anyway. The only way is to replace these people in primaries. And if we want the others to straighten up, if we want John Thune to stop being useless, Cassidy, if we want him to stop being useless, did I call him Landry? Whatever, Cassidy, if we want him to stop being useless, Mike Rounds, Tillis, all of them, if we want them to take their red state Senate seats and actually do red state things with them, then we have to make an example of somebody. Do you know what decimation is? You ever heard that term, decimation? A lot of people falsely believe that decimation means everybody is wiped out. That's not true, actually. The term decimation comes from Latin, and the term came from the Roman army, you see. And when a Roman army unit showed cowardice or failed terribly on the field of battle, they would draw straws, for lack of a better way to put it. And what would happen was they would take 10 men, and one of them, only one, the guy who got the short straw, he would be beaten to death by the other 9 men in his unit. Why? That's awful, isn't it? Why, though? Well, you only got to make an example of one or two guys, and the rest of them realize you're dead, dead serious. If Texas, if the GOP primary voter of Texas, and yes, there will be ways nationally you can contribute, but if the GOP primary voter of Texas is successful in taking out a useless loser like John Cornyn in a primary, it will send a message to the Mike Rounds of the world, hey, be really, really, really careful, because we'll come for you next. John Cornyn responded. Here's what he said.
Do you have any level of concern about Paxton running to the right of you in this primary?
Well, the biggest potential loser is President Trump's agenda. I've been a supporter of the president during his first term of office, and that's continued during his current term. Mr. Paxton has a checkered background. He is a con man and a fraud, and I think the people of Texas know that.
What you just heard was a poll-tested response from John Cornyn, and get ready for a lot of it. Right now, Ken Paxton is polling comfortably ahead of John Cornyn in a primary. That's good news. The bad news is this. John Cornyn has a strategy here, a strategy that it might work. The strategy is Operation Trump Suck Up. That's what it is. He's already running ads out there. Look at what a big supporter of Trump is. Me and Trump, Trump and me and Trump, Trump and me. That'll be the theme of the Cornyn campaign. I love Trump. Trump's my best friend. I love Trump. Trump this and Trump that. And that brings us to our risk here. You've heard me rant about it before. Donald Trump is very good at a lot of things. In fact, we're going to talk about the tariff stuff from China today. We'll talk about the good for sure. But if you had to point out a flaw, Donald Trump is the worst selector of who to endorse in a primary I think I've ever seen in my entire life. He's just terrible at it. When it comes to internal GOP politics, he will try to primary Chip Roy and Thomas Massey, and the next day he will endorse Lindsey Graham. He's just really, really bad at GOP politics. And as we speak, the rumor mill in D.C. says that Senate leader John Thune is working very, very hard lobbying Donald Trump to endorse John Cornyn. We have an opportunity here to take out a rhino, to do something really important for the entire United States of America. Let's cross our fingers Trump doesn't torpedo our efforts. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We have a huge show for you here. We'll talk to Julio Rosas about the border and other things before we get to Julio. I'm going to talk to you about a national crisis that doesn't involve John Cornyn, but clearly has affected him. Low T. You see, testosterone levels are down 50% in this country in 50 years. We have lost half of our testosterone in 50 years. We can't survive that way. I don't care how many primaries we win. I don't care how many people we deport. We can't survive that way. Chalk is here to turn it around naturally with natural herbal supplements. Do you want to feel full of pep all day long? You want to feel good all day long? Naturally. Chalk will give you the best natural herbal supplements. I take a male vitality stack every day, and I feel good all day. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Julio Rosas, Blaze Media.
Hey. Pleasure.
How are you doing?
Very fine. How are you?
I just wanted to ask you how it feels to see
that
the United States has a secure border now that President Trump is in office, as opposed to when you were Secretary of Homeland Security. Do you have any regret facilitating an open border, sir? Border crossings are down 95%. Do you regret allowing Tren de Aragua to gain a foothold in the United States, sir?
Unintended baggage is subject to search, inspection,
You don't have anything to say, sir, about your time as Homeland Security Secretary? Facilitating an open border?
You know what makes me so angry about that clip? Honestly, I could feel my blood pressure rising as we bring in Julio Rosas, national correspondent with The Blaze. What drives me crazy is they were walking by yet another restaurant that was being built in the airport. Are there any of these restaurants that are actually open, or is every single airport in the country building a good restaurant that you can't eat and drink at yet? Julio, talk about that.
Well, thankfully, because since I travel so much, I use the Centurion Lounge whenever that's available to me. So I'll let you deal with those restaurants.
Okay, Tommy Topper. I didn't realize that's what we were going to do today, Julio. Some of us don't have access to the Centurion Lounge, okay? I don't even know what that is, but it sounds Roman. What was it like, though, speaking to the former head of DHS, the man who facilitated the barbarian invasion of the country that you and I love so much?
It was weird. Just because, obviously, this is a man that I had paid a lot of attention to, obviously, you know, during the entire Biden-Harris administration. The last time I was able to ask him a question was during the Haitian bridge crisis in Del Rio, Texas, and that was all the way back in 2021. He, as you can imagine, he wasn't too happy with my question even back then. And so it was just weird, just because I wasn't expecting to see him when I was traveling to Washington, D.C. And once I realized that, oh, he's here and I can actually finally, after all this time, ask him stuff. So I obviously wanted to say a lot of things, but to remain professional, I wanted to, you know, make sure I asked the right questions. I understand there's a lot of things that I, you know, thinking back on it, I wish I could have also asked, although obviously I'm sure that his answer would have remained the same, which was obviously nothing. But it's just another reminder that, yeah, this guy did this for 4 years. He stayed the entire time. You know, people could say, well, maybe he was trying to fight it on the inside and, you know, maybe not have disagree with it. He's like, well, okay, that's fine. But then he could have left. He could have quit. He could have said that this isn't working, but he didn't. He made his choice to stay and continue to follow the orders from the White House to open our borders, allow this invasion, you know, come hell or high water. And so I understand people have a lot of questions as to why he's not in jail. That's another fair question, and it's something that I hope that the Trump administration at least addresses at some point in the near future, because the damage that this man did to our country is profound, it's long-lasting, and it's creating all these problems right now that the Trump administration is having to clean up, and as we can probably guess, it's probably all not going to be entirely solved at the end of President Trump's second term.
No, of course it won't. You're not removing 20 million people in 4 years. It's easier to bring them in than get them out. It's just not possible. And honestly, I'm glad you brought up the evil, the treasonous nature of it, Julio, because I just can't get it out of my mind how inherently evil all this was. These people created an app to facilitate, not to allow, to facilitate the invasion of our country. People forget our taxpayer dollars created an app for foreigners to come into the country. It's just so bonkers, it doesn't seem real.
And the whole reason why they did that is because the optics of, you know, thousands of people crossing the border every day illegally was tanking the numbers. And so they said, well, we have to do something. It's like, well, if we abuse the parole authority that we have and we'll let them in, you know, day by day through this app, that will make things better for us politically. And of course, that's not. Yeah, thankfully, people didn't buy that lie, right? People didn't buy this, oh, well, everything's fine now because there's CBP-1, because then we got cases, and in some ways it's even worse, because now we got cases of where they're supposedly being, checked out with their background and criminal history, and okay, they're good to go, and they just purposefully released these people who went on to commit horrific crimes. So, and it's all through the app, right? And so it is very angering. I've been feeling better about it. I mean, I just come back from El Paso recently. Obviously, nothing's happening there these days compared to 4 years ago or, you know, during those 4 years. But just because that it's finally over and things are now going in the right direction, like I said, people need to be held accountable for it. It's unfortunate that the expected response is like, well, they're probably not going to get away. You know, they're probably nothing's going to happen to them. He's just walking freely through the airport with what I presume to be his wife, and they're just going about their day as if nothing happened. And so even though, yes, I know I guess that he wasn't going to answer my questions, he wasn't going to like my questions, it's just at least it was to tell him, hey, people don't forget. You know, there's still people out here that still, you know, want answers from you because you were a big part of this. And, you know, if another opportunity arises to question him again, obviously I'm more than happy to do that. But it's just it was a very profound moment just for me personally, just because I spent so much time at the border. I've been tracking it, I've been seeing it, and so to finally, you know, have 2 minutes, right, to just hit him with questions and to, you know, have his non-response sink in, it was admittedly it was satisfying. It was really satisfying for me, even though it wasn't obviously what we wanted necessarily.
Yeah. Julio, how were things in El Paso at the border? A lot of people don't know, but El Paso means the pass in Mexican. What was it like down there?
The Border Patrol agent that I was with, it was early morning, the sun was rising, and he said something that I hadn't thought of in a while, which was, it was very peaceful. It was actually peaceful, right? And you just had the chickens in the neighboring Mexican border town that were just you know, they're the only noise being made. But it was crazy, right? I mean, that was the first time I was able to actually do anything with Border Patrol since October of 2020 in El Paso, in the El Paso sector. That was the last time I was able to do anything with them in any official capacity, because obviously once things got out of control, the Biden DHS didn't want media to be with Border Patrol to actually see firsthand what was happening. So we had to go through Texas DPS. We had to go through the Border Patrol Union. We had to find all these different, we had to go into Mexico to see things from that side, right? And that obviously has its own dangers. But we did it because we couldn't go through the official United States Border Patrol. So I'm thankful that the Trump administration has opened access back up again to that. But of course, now things are over. And the story itself isn't over, right? And there is always going to be problems at our border, but it is just, I mean, it's a night and day difference, right? And we know that. But to see that finally, when, you know, El Paso, you know, they had the bum rush at one of the bridges, that was where Venezuelans stormed and attacked the National Guardsmen. It's where they had those street releases in the middle of winter because they couldn't, the Border Patrol couldn't hold anybody, so they had to release them out into the street and they were homeless. So El Paso has been through a lot, along with obviously the rest of the border. So to see just things actually normal and things how they are actually supposed to be with a secure border, again, it was weird. It was weird, but it was good to know that at least for now, this is how things are going to be. And I can tell you that the majority Latino residents along the border are very, very happy that things are finally, you know, there's not a border crisis on their backyard anymore.
I bet they are. Julio, Semper Fi, brother. Thank you. All right. Let's talk tariffs with Dave Bratt. Let me talk to you about sleeping well every night. Sleeping like a little bitty baby. You want to sleep like that every night? You know you can do that without pills? That's what we do. We go to the doctor. Hey, can you prescribe something? I can't sleep. Or we just go to the pharmacy and get something over the counter. There's a whole section. This will help you sleep. And all that stuff will help you sleep. And all that stuff has the same thing in common. You feel like crap when you wake up. It's true. You know it's true. You wake up, you don't feel rested. You feel groggy and miserable. Dream powder from Beam, you feel good because it's natural. It has natural things in it, all these natural ingredients, reishi and all this other stuff. You drift off to sleep, but you wake up and you feel good, ready to go. Go sleep like that every night with a cup of hot chocolate. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Where are we at? I think it's unfortunate that the Chinese actually don't want to come and negotiate because they are the worst offenders in the international trading system. They have the most imbalanced economy in the history of the modern world. And, you know, I can tell you that this escalation is a loser for them, that they have some very smart, the economists, the academicians, technocrats within their bureaucracy, and they would be telling the leadership that we do not have the edge here. They are the surplus country, that their exports to the U.S. are five times our exports to China. So, you know, they can raise their tariffs, but so what?
Well, it looks like the Trump administration was dead serious about China. I don't know. I can't help but wonder if this wasn't all about China all the time, given the new announcement today. Joining me now to talk about it, former congressman and currently senior vice president of business engagement at Liberty University, Dave Brett. Dave, Trump administration just slapped a big 125% on China and told everyone else, you get 90 days off. What's going on here?
Well, I think seriously what's going on is he's trying to bring the era of globalism to an end. That's seriously what I think is going on. Tariffs is part of that story. This was an ingenious move, right? You know, who knows what's pre-planned, but the rest of the world does appear willing to negotiate. And it's not just on tariffs, right? Tariffs is probably about one-third of the story, and two-thirds is non-tariff barriers. And the American people have not been educated on that, on the dumping and the federal government subsidies and the stealing and cheating on intellectual property and manipulating the currency. All of those pieces are used, and they have been ripping us off for the past 40 years, right? For a while, we were willing to let that go, right? We set up the Bretton Woods liberal order after World War II, and we encouraged that because we wanted everybody to be on our side against Russia. But now China is posing a serious existential threat. And so this latest news right now has just cornered China, isolated them. We're decoupling from them. It's hurt the hedge funds more. My only concern is for the grandparents out there and the senior folks. I hope they're not selling off, right? Just get with a financial advisor and make sure you're doing something that's stable over the long term.
Okay, that actually brings me perfectly to something. Kevin O'Leary, this clip's making rounds. Here's what he said on the news.
104% tariffs in China are not enough. I'm advocating 400%. I do business in China. They don't play by the rules. They've been in the WTO for decades. They have never abided by any of the rules they agreed to when they came in for decades. They cheat. They steal. They steal IP. I can't litigate in their courts. They take product, technology. They steal it, they manufacture it, and sell it back here. Never has an administration
400% tariffs. What would that look like?
I want Xi on an airplane to Washington to level the playing field. This is not about tariffs anymore. 400% tariffs tomorrow morning. He'll tell you why. Xi can only stay the supreme leader if people are employed. If we wipe out any business there, because we are still 39% of all consumables on Earth and 25% of the world's GDP, America is the number one economy on Earth with all the cards. We will not have that forever. It's time to squeeze Chinese heads into the wall now.
Dave, do we have all the cards? That seems like an oversell.
No, I not by much. With China, we hold all the cards. As Bessent said, right, their trade, you know, is half their GDP. Our imports as a percentage of GDP in the U.S. are only 14%. So we can afford to play cards with China. Maybe not the whole world immediate. But what's striking is no one else is saying this, right? The Wall Street Journal, The Economist magazine, J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon. Where are they? Where's the House? Where's the Senate on these issues? They're all trading quarterly profits up to the last minute. China is doing $5 trillion worth of manufacturing a year. The U.S. is doing half of that, $2.5 trillion. China has $100 trillion capital stock to work with. We only have $70 trillion. Productivity in this country has been falling for 70 years in a row, according to the world expert at Northwestern University, Bob Gordon. That's why CBO and the Federal Reserve have us growing at 2% for the next 30 years. Where's the plan? Who's got an alternative plan? So Trump's got a plan. It looks like it's starting to work. We got, you know, $100 billion in, coming in from Taiwan chips, $500 billion from Apple, reshoring from all their Asian supply chains, and example after example already, right before things even kicked in. And so I think it's the right move. Any move doing anything gets, you know, all the status quo and all the moneymakers upset. But this is the right thing for the American people. We've forgotten about Detroit and all the cities that have been gutted. People are talking about higher import prices. I'm more concerned about the people, 5 million manufacturing jobs that have been lost, where we've lost the families have lost their income. The surrounding service jobs have lost their core industries. It's in Lynchburg, Virginia. It's in Detroit, where I was born. You don't need to go far. And that's my main concern, is we got to get America working with capital again. China's been working with capital. They somehow grew at 10% GDP for a decade with a huge tariff and cheating regime, right? Where are the experts on that? Where are our free trade buddies, right? They've all been so wrong, and no analysis on this. And it's time for us to get a fair level playing field. And Trump's doing it. He's the only one that's doing it.
Dave, he announced that there's a 90-day pause on all the other countries. Hey, China's the one that wanted to escalate, then we're going to escalate. Everyone else, you get 3 months off. So what is his goal for those countries? I know Donald Trump is a fair trader, protectionist, whatever word, whatever label you want to put on it. He's been that way for decades. So obviously he believes in tariffs. He believes in them outright. Is this 90-day pause just a 90-day pause, or is he going to maybe sweeten the pot for them to go after China? What do you think?
My guess, it's 90 days for the rest of the countries to sharpen their pencils and come back with that whole host of responses, not just on tariffs, right? Europe, Ursula von der Leyen came back, said we're going to zero tariffs on manufacturing. No. They got the VAT. They got all sorts of import controls. The car flows from Germany and the U.S. are bizarre. The flows on agriculture are bizarre. Trump's giving them, a little pause. Go do your homework. Come back with a fair proposal for us where you get rid of the cheating and the government subsidies, low cost. Prior to this, right, the important point is the economic experts supposedly were saying the only response to this is we have to just grow our monopolies and our oligarchs, right? The only way is to grow massive firms so that we can generate low costs to compete with China. No, I don't want that world either. That is not the world of Adam Smith and James Madison. We want a lot of small firms duking it out, small factions for Madison in the constitutional structure. These were geniuses that were looking out for America, for this country. The CEOs of the Fortune 500, unfortunately, have not been looking out for the country's best interest. And so this is a classic fight between Main Street and Wall Street. And Trump's the only person in recent history that's really put up a fight for the American people. So I couldn't be more thankful.
What's going on with the Panama Canal, Dave? Pete Hegseth was down there with some strong words. Here he was.
I want to be very clear. China did not build this canal. China does not operate this canal. And China will not weaponize this canal. Together with Panama in the lead, we will keep the canal secure and available for all nations through the deterrent power of the strongest, most effective, and most lethal fighting force in the world. We will do this in partnership with Panama. Together, we will take back the Panama Canal from China's influence.
Dave, take it back from China. What did China do with the canal?
Well, they're encroaching everywhere, right? On every island chain there is all around the world. They're building up artificial islands. They've been gently taking control of land and territory and property rights claims around the canal. Our original contract was with Panama and had certain conditions attached to it. Some of those conditions have been violated. And so I think Hegseth is just laying down the law. Our national security and our economic security will not be compromised by China. right? And so everyone's, the left, it's just astounding of the moral equivalency. So they'll say, well, then you got to give Taiwan to China along the same lines. No, the moral equivalency has to do with freedom and liberty, right? The Chinese are oppressing their people. They have slave labor. So they're not entitled to the same rights of taking over Taiwan for hemispheric reasons. We are not attacking any Asian country over there. In fact, we've paid the entire bill for the post-World War II liberal Bretton Woods order, it was called. We provided our defense. We're in the Red Sea protecting European trading lanes. I think we only do 4 or 5% of the trade through the Red Sea and through the ports up there. We're paying the entire bill for Europe. And so Trump's sick of it, and same here, right? We put this thing into place, and it's a U.S. asset, and he wants to keep it that way.
Dave, my brother, come back soon. I appreciate you, as always. All right. Selena Zito wants to talk about the Rust Belt. Talk to her. Before we talk to Selena, let me talk to you about all this Hire American, America First stuff. A lot of companies, a lot. They licked their finger and they stuck it in the air. And now there are a lot of companies talking about that now. Hey, we're going to make our chips here. PureTalk didn't need Donald Trump to get elected to hire Americans. They didn't need public sentiment to change. PureTalk's been hiring Americans for a long, long time. PureTalk's CEO walked the jungles of Vietnam, 2 tours for this country. Their customer service people, it was the most amazing thing. When we switched from T-Mobile to PureTalk, not only did our bill get cut in half, I remember it like it was yesterday, talking to the customer service people, sounded like Americans who spoke English. PureTalk hires Americans. So pleasant to deal with. You want to switch your cell phone service to a company like that? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, we talk about the economies, economics, tariffs, taxes. We talk about all these things, and I've always tried to be wary of talking about them from just the 30,000-foot view, what this means for macroeconomics. Not that that's not unimportant, but what does it mean on the ground for people? Somebody who's really, really, really good at this, probably the best in the country at this, is Selena Zito, selenazito.com. By the way, she has a free newsletter, I should point out. Wonderful author, writer, Selena Zito. She's always talking about these things. Selena, I have in my possession, you and I have talked about this before, from my childhood in Ohio, a little penknife my father gave me, God rest his soul. And on that penknife, it says Weirton Steele. That was the kind of family we were. Where is Weirton Steele today?
Scott, I mean, actually, what makes it so sad is it's still standing there. It's just, and if you have any images left in your memory, it is this big, as President Trump would say, this big, beautiful plant. It's massive. It's miles along the river. And it fed and made lives prosper for 100 years in that valley, in the Ohio Valley. And it's now, as of last year, it's gone. There was an economic trade agreement in the Biden administration that killed them on tariffs. And so, that was the end of it. And it, just for perspective, it wasn't just the largest employer in the region. It was the largest private employer in the entire state of West Virginia.
Selena, people don't really take that into account. And it's understandable. Everyone has a different lot in life, a different perspective. But When I was a child, everybody, I lived in Toronto, Ohio, everybody worked for the plant or something plant adjacent. If you didn't work at the plant, you worked in a diner that served breakfast to the guys who worked at the plant. The plant was the town. What did people like Joe Biden do to destroy the plant?
Well, it's been years and years of bad economic decisions, bad trade deals, lots of tariffs that have made the industry in our country non-competitive. Even though we make the best steel in the country, it is as cheap. It is not as cheap as what you get from other countries, in particular China. China is basically the bad guy in this. And their steel is also inferior. If people read the story that I wrote, there is a as you said, an adjacent industry that uses U.S. steel. But if U.S. steel goes away, he is left with very few options to purchase steel for the military vehicles that he makes. And because the Chinese steel is just bad, it's just not good, and he's not going to put our military in inferior products.
Why is Chinese steel bad?
It's just made cheaply. It's not made well. They don't have the same work ethos there that they have here. They don't. You have the same access to the kinds of minerals. I mean, very mineral rich in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, the places, and Michigan, places where steel thrived. It's the best of the best in terms of making the product, but also the workers are the best of the best. I mean, read that story. Those guys take this incredibly seriously. It's not a job. They are artisans, and it is a calling. And they don't think they're doing something that's good for them. They think they're doing something, they believe they're doing something that makes American lives better, safer, and it is part of being something bigger than self. They almost look at it as very patriotic.
You're, of course, referencing a wonderful article you wrote. You sent it to me from West Mifflin, Pennsylvania. Tell me about it.
West Mifflin, Pennsylvania is in the Mon Valley. There are three U.S. steel plants there. There is the Irvin Works, which I was in with the, you see the beautiful photos of the rolling mill. There's all those, so the Edgar Thompson Works in Braddock and the Clairton Works, only Coke makers in the entire country. You need Coke to make steel. And they are all in jeopardy with the sale of new U.S. steel to Nippon. Now, initially, these workers didn't really care for the idea of being sold to a Japanese company. You have to remember, U.S. steel is the first billion-dollar company in the world. It was the largest company in the country when it was founded in 1902. And so the idea of U.S. steel being Nippon steel is like, wait a minute, right? Japan, those were the guys that were dumping steel in the 70s. But after talking to the executives at Nippon, after meeting with them, hundreds and hundreds of times since December of 2023, the local steel workers, local 2227, are on board with this sale. Because they're going to invest in that rolling mill that you're showing. It's 86 years old. It was so awesome to be there and see it function and work, to watch these guys work. But it needs billion-dollar refitting to be redone. And Nippon has offered, I think, up to $7 billion. They have offered to keep the name U.S. Steel, and the headquarters still in Pittsburgh. Now, the only two people that were against it last year was the head of their union, the United Steelworkers International, which is based in Cleveland, and Joe Biden. Donald Trump was not as sort of vocal about not doing the deal. You know, with him, there's always sort of a nuance. And he has been meeting since February with the Prime Minister of Japan, the head of Nippon, the head of U.S. Steel, and the local steelworkers to get a deal done. I expect we will see one not too distant future.
President Trump also talked yesterday about coal. Here he was.
For four long years, Joe Biden and congressional Democrats tried to abolish the American coal industry. They did everything in their power while he was awake, which wasn't much, shutting down dozens of coal plants, banning coal leases on federal lands, and putting thousands and thousands of coal miners out of work.
The first of these executive orders is maybe one of the most significant executive orders of your administration thus far. This directs all departments and agencies of the federal government to end all discriminatory policies against the coal industry. This ends the leasing moratorium that prevents new coal projects on federal land, and it's going to accelerate all permitting and funding for new coal projects to allow the coal industry to flourish under your leadership, sir.
That's great. Thank you.
Selena, that probably matters for the Rust Belt a little bit.
It matters a lot. I've been in a couple dozen coal mines. Coal mine is not what you think it is. It's not a guy with a pick, you know, crawling underground. It's a very technology-driven industry. It's a very clean industry. The industry has changed dramatically in the past 15 years. That was another one of my great thrills as a reporter, to be able to go down into the coal mine, ride the man car out to the coal wall. It only takes a couple hours to go from that coal wall up to processing, onto a short line railroad, onto a barge, into a coal-fired power plant, and lighting up your house. And we need an abundance of energy. We are now, you know, it was the arms race when we were, well, when I was young. Today, it's the race for AI dominance. Those AI-powered data centers desperately need electricity, and a lot of it. They're not going to be able to get it from solar or wind. They're going to get it from three entities: natural gas, coal, and nuclear. They just announced a natural gas power plant in Western Pennsylvania that's shovel ready. It's ready to start next week. 10,000 jobs, $10 billion invested in this power plant. That doesn't even include the jobs and the build out for the AI power data center. Look for a lot of that across the Rust Belt because the infrastructure is already there.
She is Selena Zito. By the way, I want to encourage you to go buy her book, Butler. She was there when they shot Donald Trump in the head, so go pick that up. It's, of course, wonderful, like everything she writes is. Selena, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you very, very much. All right. We have light in the mood. We're going to hear from you next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and I want to encourage you, because we're about to read some comments from it, go subscribe to the YouTube channel. We'll always put some things up there, funny little clips from the show, little things you can't get elsewhere. At Jesse Kelly DC on YouTube. You can go scan it with your phone. So, but we thought it might be fun and funny to just comb through some of the comments that have been left over last little bit. Hey, Jesse, we know your thoughts on Thanksgiving and turkey. What are your thoughts on Easter and ham? My thoughts on it are this. I'm very, very pro-Easter because I believe in Jesus. I despise ham because I believe in taste. Jeremiah says, is Thursday a good night to go to Red Lobster or a great night? Every night is a good night to go to an American institution like Red Lobster. Jose Mendoza says, Jesse is the GOAT. That is 100% correct. I like Jose a lot. He and I should be friends. Ken Bright accused me of, quote, being Trump's mouthpiece and talking bollocks. Ken, listen, I'm an understanding person. I'm a man of the planet, I guess I would say. Well-traveled, if you will. Europeans are welcome to watch the YouTube channel, to watch the show. They're not welcome to comment. Bollocks is not something we say, speak English. Martin Stanley called Ellie Mistel, that nutball commie on TV, a chocolate Q-tip. That's actually hilarious. If you would like to participate in insulting me or insulting America's communists, you are more than welcome to do so. Drift over to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@JesseKellyDC. One final little one. Quote, garlic bread rules the world and all others are pretenders to the throne. As I've said many, many times before, once garlic bread was invented, is there a purpose to other bread? It's like gravy. Once somebody figured out that we can put sausage in it, once we got sausage gravy, why would I ever have regular gravy? Same type of thing. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.